Unit 3. Short conversations. Directions. In this section, you will hear 10 short conversations. At the end of each conversation, a question will be asked about what was said. Each conversation and question will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 suggested answers, marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer.
1. Bob, can you tell me what percentage of the United States population is registered to vote?
Off the top of my head, I'm afraid I don't know.
Question. What does Bob mean?
2. My radio doesn't work. What do you think I should do?
Why not call Mr. Jones? Question. What does the woman mean?
3. I'd like to drive to the concert, but my brother has the car tonight.
Who needs a car? We can take the subway if we go a little earlier. Question. What does the woman mean? 4. Did you see Susan in the business office?
Yes, she was applying for a student loan.
Question. What was Susan doing? 5. Do you think we should invite Peter over for dinner?
His mother's here for a visit.
Question. What does the man mean?
6. Did the drama students build all the scenery for the program?
No, they had a carpenter make it according to their design. Question. Where did the scenery come from?
7. I can't seem to find Turking Street on the map.
Why don't you ask someone where it is? Question. What does the woman mean?
8. How long has Alex been working on his degree? 5 years?
At least that long. Question. What is the woman saying about Alex? 9. This lake is so wide that you can't see the other side.
I wouldn't want to try to swim across it.
Question. What does the man mean?
10. Let's have a festival at the beginning of the school year to raise some money for the club.
Good. That will get the ball rolling. Question. What does the woman mean?
Note-taking. Do you want to know the secret to happiness? How important friendship, money, and other things are to happiness? Here's what the psychology professor David G. Myers recommends. Don't expect money to buy you happiness. The actual amount of money people earn has little effect on how happy they feel. What does count is how satisfied they are with their income. Savor the moment. Happiness comes from little things that happen every day, rather than the occasional great pieces of good fortune. Learn to like yourself. People with healthy self-esteem are less vulnerable to setbacks and struggles. Self-esteem grows out of achieving realistic goals. Gain control of your life by setting realistic goals. We often overestimate how much we can achieve in one day, leaving us frustrated. But we generally underestimate how much we can accomplish in a year with just a little daily progress. Take occasional days of rest. Spend the hours enjoying quiet time alone. Put on a happy face, even if you don't feel happy. Smiling can actually make you feel better. Exercise. Aerobic exercise, such as walking, biking, swimming, and running, works as an antidote for mild depression and anxiety. Get enough sleep to feel rested. 1 in 5 Americans shortchange themselves on snooze time. But sleep is vital to recharge your batteries, improve alertness, and reduce gloomy moods. Build close relationships. The best remedy for unhappiness is a caring, nurturing friendship. And if you're married, a good relationship with your spouse can be especially important.
Passage. There are 2 types of people in the world. Although they have equal degrees of health and wealth and other comforts of life, one becomes happy, the other becomes miserable. This arises from different ways in which they consider things, persons, and events, and the resulting effects upon their minds. The people who are to be happy fix their attention on the conveniences of things, the pleasant parts of a conversation, the well-prepared dishes, the goodness of the wines, and fine weather. They enjoy all the cheerful things. Those who are to be unhappy think and speak only of the contrary things. Therefore, they are continually discontented. By their remarks, they sour the pleasures of society, offend many people, and make themselves disagreeable everywhere. If this turn of mind were founded in nature, such unhappy persons would be the more to be critical. The tendency to criticize and be disgusted is perhaps taken up originally by imitation. It grows into a habit, unknown to its possessors. The habit may be strong, but it may be cured when those who have it are convinced of its bad effects on their interests and tastes. I hope this little warning may be of service to them and help them change this habit. Although, in fact, it is chiefly an act of the imagination, it has serious consequences in life, since it brings on deep sorrow and bad luck. Those people offend many others, nobody loves them, and no one treats them with more than the most common politeness and respect, and scarcely that. This frequently puts them in bad temper and draws them into arguments. If they aim at obtaining some advantage in rank or fortune, nobody wishes them success. Nor will anyone stir a step or speak a word to favor their hopes. If they bring on themselves public disapproval, no one will defend or excuse them, and many will join to criticize their misconduct. These people should change this bad habit and condescend to be pleased with what is pleasing without worrying needlessly about themselves and others. If they do not, it will be good for others to avoid any contact with them. Otherwise, it can be disagreeable and sometimes very inconvenient, especially when one becomes mixed up in their quarrels.
Questions. 1. According to the author, what kind of people tend to be unhappy? 2. What do the people do if they tend to sour the pleasures of society? 3. Which of the following statements is not true according to the passage? 4. How are these people usually treated? 5. If such unhappy persons don't change their bad behavior, what is the author's solution to the problem? Story. Mr. Brown was at the theater. He had got his ticket at the last moment, so he had not been able to choose his seat. He now found that he was in the middle of a group of American ladies, some of them middle-aged and some quite old. They obviously all knew each other well. As before the curtain went up on the play they had come to see, they all talked and joked a lot together. The lady sitting on Mr. Brown's left, who was about 60 years old, seemed to be the happiest and the most amusing one of the American group, and after the first act of the play, she apologized to him for the noisiness of her friends. He answered that he was very glad to see American ladies so obviously enjoying their visit to England, and so they got into conversation. Mr. Brown's neighbor explained what they were doing there. "You know, I have known these ladies all my life," she answered. "We all grew up together back in our hometown in the United States. They have all lost their husbands and call themselves the Merry Widows. It's a sort of club, you know. They go abroad every summer for a month or two and have a lot of fun. They always go everywhere together. I have wanted to join their club for a long time, but I didn't qualify for membership until the spring of this year.